Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's RTC podcast, and we're going to feature music basically this week. We're going to start off with a program called Moral Victory, and it's from the Radio Hall of Fame. This is from 1944, and after that, we'll have an episode of Guest Star. That's a 15-minute program with the Pied Pipers from 1949, and a kids show, too. For those seeking out adventure, we have an episode of Captain Midnight following up all this music. So, interesting program this week. Stay tuned.
This is the Radio Hall of Fame. Radio Hall of Fame is presented during the full hour ahead by Philco Corporation, makers today of radar and electronic battle equipment for the fighting forces of the United Nations, makers tomorrow of equipment for good living in a free world united by victory. Each week, the editors and correspondents of Variety report and select for the Philco program the hits of the show world from all fields of entertainment. And now, may I present our master of ceremonies, the distinguished composer, author, and commentator, Dean Staylor.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This week, the editors of Variety recommend for your pleasure, and Philco delights to honor in your name,
from radio and motion pictures, Connie Boswell. From radio and the recording studios, Benny Goodman. From motion pictures, Mary Astor and William Gargan. From vaudeville and radio, Dr. Rockwell.
And entering from stage left to conduct the Philco Radio Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus comes Paul Whiteman.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Whiteman speaking. Today's overture is based on a spot of music by Jerome Kern. Later on today, we'll have more to say about Jerry. Meanwhile, one of his latest called Make Way for Tomorrow.
And it comes from the score of the current picture success, Cover Girl.
Thank you. today to make way for tomorrow. Strike up the band for a brand new tomorrow. Out of the blue comes a call. Let there be music for all. Let's have an end to this mare over here, over there. Let's
The pattern of Philco's progress in engineering and design is clearly shown in the development of the Philco radio phonograph. When recorded music returned to popularity, Philco took the lead in bringing the old-fashioned phonograph up to date. Out of its laboratories came a series of inventions that brought new delights to recorded music. The pointed steel needle that scrapes the music from the record was gone. Instead, a rounded jewel that never needs changing floated gently over the records and released hidden overtones of glorious beauty for the first time. Surface noise and record wear were reduced by 10 to 1. And the tilt front cabinet did away with lifting of lids and dark, unhandy compartments. These pioneering developments made by Philco in America made Philco America's number one radio phonograph before the war. But even greater achievements are coming when victory is won. The swift advance of electronic science has opened the door to new and greater joys from recorded music. And through the pattern of Philco progress in engineering and design, they will be yours under the famous Philco name.
She was born in New Orleans, as you could guess after 2 minutes conversation with her. She plays the cello, the trumpet, and the saxophone. She and her sisters were the famous Boswell sisters. And she has achieved equal fame as a soloist, both in radio and pictures, where she handles swing numbers and ballads with equal skill. She's one of our most consistently successful recording artists, the sales of her records totaling well into the millions. And all this could add up to only one person whom Philco delights to honor today, Connie Boswell. And of all her recordings, the all-time favorite is her swing version of the aria Mappari, known simply as the Martha Selection. And Connie Boswell is going to sing it for us today, exactly as she recorded it.
She beguiled this heart of mine. Reft of vain as she came, dark the future seemed to loom, till her clear brilliant sphere knew we might dispel the gloom. Oh, she fled, quickly spared all my joy and fleeting gleam, as my way, hopes forsake, robbing me of godlike dreams, of godlike dreams. So pure, oh so bright, first her beauty on my sight, oh so mild, so divine, she beguiles all of mine.
Martha, Martha, yeah. Martha.
in song and share the home with me. Share the boom with me, yeah, with me. Ah, so pure, ah, so bright, burst her beauty on my sight. Oh, so mild, so divine, she beguileth all of mine. Martha, Martha, thou hast taken every bliss away with thee. Canst thou leave me thus forsaken? Come and share thy boon with me.
There are only two ways, only two easy ways to introduce Benny Goodman. One is to talk steadily for 10 minutes, and the other is to say simply, here's Benny Goodman. I'm tempted to take the second way because it's very difficult to compress his career into a comparatively few words. Back in 1934, Variety hailed a new style of playing that his band introduced called swing, and that band has been swinging for millions ever since. As a clarinetist, Benny is equally famous as a swing virtuoso and a serious concert artist. He has invaded the sacred precincts of chamber music and has been soloist with 9 of our major symphony orchestras. His latest picture, soon to be released by 20th Century Fox, is Sweet and Lowdown. Today, a welcome visitor to the Radio Hall of Fame, he brings us his famous swing quartet, comprising Sid Weiss at the string bass, Cozy Cole on the drums, Teddy Wilson at the piano, and with his clarinet, the king of swing himself, Benny Goodman.
Thank you. That is, I imagine most of you know, was Body and Soul. That was wonderful, Benny. Do you suppose now, by way of contrast, we might have a little something a little more...
You mean the lighter side of Goodman, Dean?
That's it.
What about After You've Gone?
Solid. Radio Hall of Fame welcomes two famous screen stars, a pair who arrived at their present exalted station by two very different roads. One is William Gargan, Brooklyn-born, who, after a checkered career as salesman, collector, payroll guardian, and soda jerker, found his great opportunity as the butler in Philip Barry's play, The Animal Kingdom. The movie scouts knew a good actor when they saw one, with the result that you've been seeing him on the screen ever since. The other is Mary Astor. Playing her first motion picture assignment at the age of 14, she soon became a star of the silent pictures. Then came sound, to the ruination of many a career, but not Miss Astor's, for it turned out that Mary Astor sounded as well as she looked, which is no faint praise. And so she became a star all over again. And now it's with great pride that Philco presents Mary Astor and William Gargan in Milton Geiger's Moral Victory, with music by Paul Creston.
The scene, a big city nightclub. At a secluded table sit a man and a woman. The woman, though attentive to her escort, is nevertheless highly alive to her surroundings. The man is large and square looking. There is something solid and substantial about him. He is not quite comfortable in these exotic surroundings. The girl is born to it. The man watches the girl indulgently as she looks about, talking a steady commentary on the things around her that seemed to hold an endless excitement for her.
Look, Dan, isn't that Kramer Cleveland coming in, the actor?
Wouldn't know.
What a stunning blonde he has with him.
She don't stun me.
Doesn't, darling.
Same thing.
It is Kramer. His new play isn't doing any too well, poor darling.
It worries me sick.
Oh, shush, Dan. Those things mean something to some people.
Not me.
Well, they should.
Not me. I'm ignorant.
You're not. You just try to be.
How am I doing?
Splendidly.
That takes care of me, I guess.
Daniel.
Oh, call me Dan.
Doesn't it occur to you that in your own way, you're a kind of a snob?
Who, me?
You are a snob, Daniel. The worst kind of a snob.
Here we go.
I mean it. And your kind of snobbery is just as annoying and real
As your kind?
Well, yes.
Aren't we the honestest people we ever talk to?
My snobbishness is the uptown variety, but I know it, and I'm on my guard against it. Yours is the snobbishness of the self-made man, the plugger who came up the hard way to become district attorney, no less.
Isn't that good?
Oh, it's fine, Dan, really, and I'm very proud of you. But sometimes you can be most annoying.
Wait until we're married 3 years. All those little differences will be ironed right out. Marriage, like war, is a mighty leveler. I read it in a book, that thick.
I wonder...
What?
About us. Which of us is the stronger?
Wanna wrestle?
If it came to a contest of wills, of principles, who would win? The district attorney who got where he is by sheer force of will and ambition?
What about character?
Or the uptown girl, very possibly with some character of her own? Who'd win? Who would be the stronger?
Well, let's make an issue and see. Name your weapons.
Oh, Dan, I'm serious. It's really something we ought to know about before we're married, don't you think? It rather comes under the heading of, are we good for each other? Or don't you think so? Or do you think...
What's the matter?
Haskell Beecher just came in.
Oh.
You'd better take me home, Dan. Now.
Now, there's a case in point, Lola. I have every reason to dislike Haskell Beecher as much as you do.
Dislike him? I hate him.
Granted. He's hurt you and he's hurt me.
My father would be alive today if Haskell Beecher hadn't broken him with his crooked stock deals.
I know, and I feel about him as you do. But I don't go showing my colors in public. If he came over to my table, I'd probably buy him a drink. Bide my time.
I'll leave if he even looks this way.
Just so. I've learned to behave like a civilized human being. You haven't. Of the two of us, I have better discipline.
Discipline? Hypocrisy.
No, darling. This is a kind of a test, isn't it? The kind you meant.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. Take me home, Dan. Take me home before I...
Violence, Lola? It isn't done. Now, if I were you, Lola...
Please, Dan, I want to go home.
Okay.
Why did you send for me, Dan? We don't usually meet for dinner in your office.
I thought we could have a chat together. We haven't seen each other in a week, you know.
But why did you have me come to your office?
Lola, there's no immediate cause for alarm.
Alarm?
Well, I might as well come to the point. If I seem brutally direct, well,
You mustn't let any personal considerations interfere with what you have to tell me.
Why? What do you mean?
I should think you'd know better than I do. However, I'll enlarge upon my statement. For the moment, you may consider me as just someone you brought in for questioning, and not the woman you're supposed to be in love with.
All right. Haskell Beecher was murdered last night.
Oh, weep for Haskell Beecher. He is dead.
You've got to help me.
Oh, I'd like to, Dan. I'd like to.
Will you?
That depends.
You never liked Haskell Beecher.
I hated him. So did you. So did every decent person who knew what he was.
True. Perhaps if I were the kind of person I used to be, if I hadn't won over my early environment... Maybe I'd have killed him myself.
Daniel.
I'm not accusing you, Lola.
I'm glad.
I'm just asking you. Did you kill him?
Simply because I hated him?
You had a motive. He drove your father to suicide.
You won out over your environment, Daniel. I remain true to mine.
I want to know. Did you kill Haskell Beecher?
Certainly not.
All right. So much for that. Although I think I knew it.
Well, that's kind of you, Daniel.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Lola. Take down your guard. I need your help. We think we know who killed Beecher.
Oh?
We've made an arrest. We're holding the suspect.
Justice marches on.
Cut it out, Lola.
Well, what do you expect? Whatever you say, you still suspect me?
No, Lola. My word of honor.
You do. I know you. Iron-bound Morgan, the self-made man. You'd send your own grandmother to the chair if you thought she was guilty. Well, I'm not your grandmother.
Lola, I only want to ask you one question. After that, we'll pack out of here and have dinner and forget the whole business as far as you're concerned.
What do you want to know?
You didn't kill Haskell Beecher. But we think you know who did. Who was it?
How would I know?
We have positive evidence that you were at the scene of the crime no more than a minute, possibly only moments after it was committed.
It's not true.
Lola, you can't beat me on that. It is true. You know it and I know it. We have witnesses who definitely place you near the scene at the right time.
Then ask them who the killer was.
Unluckily, they were once removed from actually seeing who he was. That happens, of course. You were seen and recognized in a position where you would surely have seen the murderer leaving Haskell's apartment. We've got to know who it was.
You're talking nonsense, Daniel.
We have the suspect in the next room. We can possibly convict him without your testimony. Probably we can't. More likely that a killer, an enemy of the people, will escape punishment unless you help us.
I'm sorry, I can't tell you who it was.
You can't or you won't.
Oh, let me alone.
Lola, believe me, it isn't fun trying to send a man to his death. I don't like it. I hate it. But it's a job that someone has got to do, and I'm trying to do it to the best of my knowledge and conscience.
Yes. Honest Dan Morgan, without fear and without reproach, risen from the ranks. He hates to send a man to the chair, but he doesn't mind if I do.
I wonder if this is the contest.
Contest?
The Uptown Yankees versus the Gas House Gang. Remember our little conversation at the club last week?
Oh.
For the championship of the civilized world?
Or in the nice eye of nature, which breed is the best?
That's right. Maybe this is the showdown. Maybe this is it.
I'll tell you this, Daniel. If you love me, stop tormenting me like this.
Tormenting you?
It won't get you anywhere. And everything will be over between us, I warn you.
That's final, is it?
Quite final.
All right. Glad you dropped in, anyhow. Well, that is, the office will be in touch with you again. Naturally, future discussions will have to be on the usual formal basis. I'm only the lawyer, you know. We fell out of love 30 seconds ago.
Daniel.
You see, Lola, I may not be just the legal machine you think I am. Maybe I'm a man. Can be. If I thought for one minute I was asking more of you than I was giving myself...
But you are asking a great deal, Dan. Very much. You don't understand. You become hard and brutalized in your work. Maybe the struggle to get where you are did something to you, to your humanity.
I don't think so, Lola.
Well, whatever it is, you'd never be able to understand why I've done as I've done, what I've been through in the last few minutes.
Torment, I think you call it.
Oh, you needn't sneer. It hasn't been easy for me.
It hasn't been easy for me either.
It's routine to you. One more conviction, one more charge through a condemned man's body. One more rung up the ladder that honest Dan Morgan has chosen as his way to power, to success.
That's enough. I won't torment you any further. Goodbye, Lola. It's been nice knowing you.
Dan, we can't break off like this.
What else is there? I couldn't go on with you. Knowing you shielded a possible murderer from justice, I guess I'm that kind of a fool.
Suppose I were to tell you why I can't tell you who the killer was.
I don't know if it would make any difference. I can't commit the people to any promise I might make about it.
All right, I'll tell you anyway. I can't tell you who the killer was because I was on the way to murder Haskell Beecher myself. There. Does that satisfy you?
Doesn't solve anything. Doesn't justify your silence.
Daniel, have you lost every shred of human understanding in this miserable office?
I haven't let sentiment and my personal feelings smother my sense of duty, if that's what you mean.
I was going to kill Beecher myself. The fact that someone anticipated me, that someone else got there first, doesn't excuse me. Your courts have a rule that the accuser must come to the bar of justice with clean hands himself. My hands aren't clean. I can't condemn a man for the crime I myself planned on doing. Can't you understand that? Or is that all too subtle for you?
The gas house set was short on money and position, Lola. Not on heart and human understanding and a strong moral sense. I'm sorry, but I can't follow your own queerly twisted reasoning on this matter. And I can't stay with my job under the circumstances. You've put me in a position where I'll have to quit.
Quit? Give up your post here after all your work?
I haven't much choice. Maybe that's a decision too subtle for you. I don't know.
Quit? Give up your career? Where is the suspect?
In the next room.
Show him to me.
You'll identify him?
Show him to me.
All right, I'll have to call in. Excuse me. Bradley, I'm going to open the panel here. Someone will identify the prisoner, yeah. Throw the lights on him, right. We observe suspects through the panel while they're dazzled by light. It's for your own protection, of course. Here. Now, Can you see him clearly enough?
Yes.
Is that the man you saw escaping from the scene of the crime last night? Be awfully sure, Lola. Is he the man?
Oh.
Sure?
I'm positive.
Thanks. That'll be all, Bradley. Thanks. I'm very grateful to you, Lola. Very. And relieved.
You're relieved. You are. What about me?
Lola, I know very well how you must have felt and thought while I was driving you.
Why should you?
Why shouldn't I? He's one of my kind. That man in there started where I did, in the gas house set. He tried, but he didn't make the grade. One of the many deadly enemies Haskell Beecher succeeded in acquiring in his busy lifetime.
You seem to know all about him. Friend of yours?
In a way. He's my brother.
Your brother?
You see, I had to know, Lola.
But suppose...
I had to know, win or lose.
I see. I remember. Principle. Discipline. It's been the contest, hasn't it, Daniel?
How do I stack up in the pitch? In the nice eye of nature, how am I doing?
Wonderful, Daniel. Splendidly.
Mr. Martin, do you like poetry?
Why, very much, Mr. Taylor. Why do you ask?
Well, I was wondering if you recall one of my favorite poems, Robert Browning's In a Gondola.
Yes, I remember it well.
Remember the second stanza? When she says, say after me and try to say my very words, as if each word came from you of your own accord, in your own voice, in your own way, say...
This is the Blue Network.
The opening of Act Two of the Radio Hall of Fame reveals Paul Whiteman on the brink of conducting a work that bears the cryptic title as Kreutzer Spins. Well, I give up, Paul. What is it?
Very simple, sonny boy. It's a fantasy on an exercise from Kreutzer's book of violin studies.
Sounds very dreary. Who did that?
Dave Rose.
Oh, well, that's different.
It sure is. Dave Rose is a lad who has a knack of writing instrumental pieces that turn into song hits. Poinciana and Holiday for Strings are two of his that started out for the orchestra alone, had words put to them, and are now bestsellers. This one, I think, might do the same.
Okay, let's hear how it begins. Now, don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, if, as Kreutzer Spins, doesn't seem to get off to a very promising start. Let's hear what David Rose does with it.
Thank you.
George Lovejoy Rockwell shares with Julius Leonard and Arthur Marx the distinction of never hearing his first name in public. You who heard him on Fred Allen's program last week will know that I refer to Dr. Rockwell. For many years, the doctor has been discoursing on the subject of human health in vaudeville and on the air. Despite his self-conferred degree, Philco hesitates to recommend him as a family physician. On the other hand, if your malady is simple clausoporia, a Greek disease meaning lack of laughter, the man to handle your case is undoubtedly the one who at this moment is mounting the front steps of the Radio Hall of Fame, Dr. Rockwell.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are tonight, you and I in this great big auditorium. You've been sitting out here laughing, smiling, having a good time. But let's pause for a few seconds and ask ourselves one or two worthwhile, serious questions. Where were we 100 years ago? Where are we going to be 100 years from now? For centuries, scientists have been trying to figure out where we came from. And for centuries, the ministers have been trying to figure out where we're going. And in between, we have a third group, the Treasury Department, who say we don't care where you came from or where you're going. You're here now. How much have you got and how fast can we get it? Now, I'm not interested in talking money tonight, but I am interested in post-war. We face all kinds of radical changes, revolutionary changes in the post-war period. And at this time, I'd like to discuss with you one of our outstanding problems. Can woman ever replace the horse? Now, first of all, let us trace the evolution of mankind dating away back from the Neolithic water period up until that of today, the plutocratic age. We notice a great many changes have taken place. We see the old-fashioned hot water bottle has given away to the electric heating pad. The old-fashioned sulfur and molasses has given away to the yeast cake. And the old-fashioned bathing suit has given away entirely. See, that's what we call change. Life is a series of changes. Everything changes. For example, look at the hair on the heads of these wonderful saxophone players. Then look at the back of my head there. And if that doesn't convince you, look at Deems Taylor's head over here. You see what I mean? It's one change after another. For instance, it's only a few weeks ago, or a few years rather, that scientists came along and gave us a wonderful invention to provide entertainment for the ear. They called it the radio. Today, they've added entertainment for the eye, and we have television. In the post-war period, they'll add entertainment for the nose, and we'll have smell-o-vision. Now, just realize, you can sit right back in your own home and inhale the perfume of a great big field of nodding daffodils, or you can look in at one man's family at breakfast and inhale the fragrant aroma of steaming coffee or sizzling bacon. Of course, if you want to, you can tune on Macy's household department in the basement and get a whiff of those camphor balls and moth flakes. But another great post-war development, electronics, will be a small pocket-sized lie detector. Every married man will have one of these lie detectors and be able to check up on his wife, if you know what I mean. That is, when she says, honey, this is not oleomargarine, he just straps a lie detector right around her wrist, and right away he knows whether she's telling the truth. Of course, if he does find out she's lying, what good will it do him? After all, he took her for butter or worse. But the place where the lie detector will be of the most value will be in the post office when you go in to try and cash a money order. When the man says to you, is this your name? You say yes. That's all there is to it. And it does away with all this red tape and trying to identify yourself. Why, yesterday, down at the main post office here, I went and tried to cash a little $10 money order. I had to pull everything out of my pockets. I showed him bills, envelopes, laundry lists, pawn tickets, supinis. He wouldn't believe me. And I finally had to pull off my coat, vest, peel off my shirt, and show him the laundry mark on the inside of my collarbone. There were 15 other people there trying to cash money orders, all peeled off the same way. A stranger coming into the place couldn't tell whether it was a post office or an induction center. So you can see how valuable the lie detector is going to be. Now, another great change we face in the post-war world will be in the matter of education. We have already demonstrated that a four-year college course, can be completed in 4 years. Now, this streamlining of education will be perfected in the post-war period, and high school will only take 2 years, and grammar school 5 or 6 weeks. Now, realize what that means. The average boy is going to graduate from college when he's 9 years old. Of course, then he's got to hang around for 9 years before he can take a job without breaking the child labor laws. And by that time, he'll probably have forgotten everything he learned in college and wouldn't be able to get a job. But of course, that wouldn't make a great deal of difference. Because after all, we once had a 6-day week, then we had a 5-day week. In the post-war world, we'll have a no-day week. And you wouldn't be able to tell who's working and who's a bum. Now, aside from all these wonderful changes, that goes to show that we have got to be ready to adjust ourselves to the post-war changes. In other words, how are we going to do it? Because the mind, the human mind, is a very peculiar piece of mechanism. That is, we are two different, distinct personalities. We have dual personalities, and that's due to the fact that the brain is divided into two parts, A and B. That's what causes all our trouble. For instance, A has you write a letter, and then B forgets to mail it. Now, another sample of that was the case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You remember daytimes, Hyde was a policeman, and nights, he was a burglar. The chances are none of us would have ever known anything about it if daylight savings hadn't got him all mixed up and he arrested himself. Well, there is the personality, and right out in this audience tonight, many of you folks have this dual personality. That is, you think for two persons. Of course, there are others of you who have a different type of a dual personality. You eat enough for two persons. Don't laugh. I see any number of them sitting right around here with double chins, triple stomachs, and no laps at all. There's one lady sitting over there. Don't slink down in the seat, lady. Don't do that. There's no disgrace to be fat, because right at this time, with a fat drive on, it's valuable. You know, fat makes glycerin, and glycerin makes gunpowder. The only trouble is if all you fat people try to crunch down and hide, we're liable to have a case here of spontaneous combustion. Now, pay attention. I may ask questions here later on, you know.
Pardon me, Doc.
Yes, Paul. What is it? Have you got a post-war question?
No, I'm taking up a collection.
Collection? As I was saying, ladies and gentlemen, in the post-war...
This will only take a minute.
A minute. Well, what is it, Paul?
Will you give $20 to bury a member of our local ration board?
To bury a member of your local ration board? $20? Paul, here's $100. Bury 5 of them. Ladies and gentlemen, getting back to our post-war problems, the biggest change we're going to see in the field of medicine will be in the sulfa drugs. These sulfa drugs are coming out now faster than we can make up new names for them. In fact, last week a new drug came out called sulfa bihex. Oh my goshly. Now that, the scientists claim that that's going to cure housemaid's knee. How can they prove it? These days, where can you find a housemaid? Now, there's another sulfur drug already on the market, a sulfur chewing gum. In this form, the sulfur is almost as powerful as radium. And a great deal, hundreds of our teenage boys and girls here in New York are chewing it now, and it cures sore throat. Of course, like other sulfur drugs, occasionally there are bad after effects. For instance, lots of these boys and girls go into the Paramount Theater chewing this gum, sit down, stick the sulfur gum under the seat, and out comes Benny Goodman or some other band and starts to play. Now, the kids understand a perfect little, ladies and gentlemen. They want to sit still, but all those sulfur rays are coming up through the seats. They stand it so long till finally they can stand it no longer, jump out in the aisle, and start dancing. There you are, jitterbugs. And there, ladies and gentlemen, I've outlined the main things of our post-war world. And if you leave the theater tonight, just keep this one thought in mind. Science is learning more and more about less and less till finally we'll know everything about nothing. Thank you.
Every user of a Philco refrigerator has reason to thank the forward vision of Philco engineers for a vital extra service which they enjoy today. It's the frozen food compartment, a huge separate space in addition to the regular ice cube chamber, where foods of all kinds can be stored for weeks at below freezing temperatures. In these days of food rationing, think what that Philco frozen food compartment would mean to you as you face new and unusual problems of meal planning and food keeping. This is but one example of the advanced thinking which Philco engineers have brought to refrigeration. The Philco refrigerator of today is a mere hint of the greater Philco refrigerator of tomorrow. When a victorious peace permits these engineers to return to their peacetime tasks, they will bring to refrigeration new conceptions of advanced design and utility, new evidence of the engineering progress that has made the Philco name synonymous with leadership over the years.
Kern has been turning out scores for musical comedies and more recently for motion pictures that have established him as one of the most brilliantly talented composers of this era. And so today, as a gesture of gratitude to a distinguished artist, Paul Whiteman, the Radio Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus, Benny Goodman and Connie Boswell, joined forces to bring you a medley arranged by Theodore Weingand of some of the best-known airs of Jerome Kern.
Is mine the dream. Thank you.
with us next week, same time, same station, when the Philco Radio Hall of Fame returns with another show of shows. We'll expect you this time next week at the gate of the Radio Hall of Fame, signed Deems Taylor.
Next week, another brilliant gathering of stars with Jeanette MacDonald, Frank Morgan, the Milhurst Trio, as well as Paul Whiteman, his orchestra and chorus, and others. This is Gilbert Martin saying goodbye for Philco dealers and distributors throughout the United States and Canada. And from Philco Corporation, makers today of radio and electronic materials to help win the war. Makers tomorrow of materials for good living in a world at peace. The production staff of the Radio Hall of Fame includes D. Engelbach, producer-director, and Abel Green, editor of Variety.
Is the Blue Network.
You're listening to the RTC Weekly Download, where we feature a lot of different stuff every week, all old-time radio, and we're featuring mostly music this week. We will have that kid show, Captain Midnight, coming up, but before that, we're going to have an episode of Guest Star, and the Pied Pipers are on it. This is from 1949. It's actually February 20th of 1949. The Pied Pipers were a popular music group in the 40s, and let's give this program a listen and see what the Pied Pipers are all about this time.
The United States Savings Bonds Division presents Guest Star. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Jess Barker saying hello for Guest Star, a savings bonds transcribed program presented by this station as a public service. Friends, think of your future. Make it a secure one by buying savings bonds and buying them regularly. Today's guest is really a group of guests. For occupying the spotlight on our show, we have one of the most popular singing groups in this country, the famous Pied Pipers. They'll be here in person in a moment, but first, here's David Rose and the Savings Bonds Orchestra to start things off with Serenade from the Student Prince.
Thank you, David Rose. And now for our musical treat, the Pied Pipers, opening their part in our program with a tune that was the smash hit of 20-odd years ago. Yes, we have no bananas.
We got meat, we got coffee, we got cigarettes, even toffee. We got sugar, got honey, got shoes, we got gas, even money. We got cars, we got nylons, we got neutrons, even cyclones. We got most everything, even a new song to sing. But you know what? We ain't got, yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. We string beans and onions, kabajas and scallions, and all kinds of fruit, and say, we have an old-fashioned tomato, a fat Long Island potato, but yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.
Well, gang, you can see what a hit you made with our audience.
Turnabout's fair play.
Turnabout's fair play? I don't get it.
What he means is that we make a hit on the savings bond program because savings bond make a hit with us.
And what especially do you like about them?
They're safe. Uncle Sam guarantees you against loss.
They're profitable. You get back $4 for every $3 you invest in them in just 10 years.
They're easy to buy through the payroll savings plan where you work.
Or, if you are your own boss, through the bond a month plan where you bank.
Right. Savings bonds are a swell way to save safely. Say, how about another tune?
Okay. Here's our own version of Shine On Harvest Moon.
Moon up in the sky. I ain't had no loving since January, February, June or July. Snow time ain't no time to stay outdoors and spoon. So shine on, harvest moon, for me and my guest. Mm-hmm.
was mighty dark, so you could hardly see, for the moon refused to shine. Couples sitting underneath a willow tree for love they pine. Little maid was kind of afraid of darkness, so she said, I guess I'll go. Boy began to sigh, looked up in the sky, told the moon his little tale of woe. Shine on, harvest moon, up in the sky, oh, I had no lover since January, February, June, or July. Small time ain't no time to stay. Outdoors and spoons, so shine on. Shine on, harvest moon, for me.
Thank you, Pied Pipers. And now, ladies and gentlemen, David Rose and the Savings Bonds Orchestra bring our show to a close with 12th Street Rag. You've been listening to Guest Star, a transcribed feature program brought to you by United States Savings Bonds and this station as a public service. Today's guests were the stars of radio, records, and screen, to say nothing of the theater, the Pied Pipers. David Rose conducted the Savings Bonds Orchestra. Make it a point to join us again next week. We can promise you more good music and another well-known entertainer from radio, stage, or screen. Meanwhile, here's a goodbye from Jess Barker with a reminder that your security, America's security, can't wait. Buy savings bonds now and buy them regularly.
And, as you no doubt know by now, the program Guest Star was a government service program. The selling security bonds in the show was provided free of charge for radio stations to play at no cost to help in the process of selling those bonds. So, they're good shows just the same, so we just had a chance to listen to it. We did. Now it's time for Captain Midnight, and we'll see what the boys are up to. They're establishing a hidden airfield. This is from 1939.
Skelly Oil Company presents Captain Midnight. Captain Midnight, brought to you every day, Monday through Friday, at the same time, by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. But first, you boys and girls, have you got the grand free gift I told you about yesterday? Have you got the two big free pictures the Skelly Man has for you? Well, now, if you haven't, you'd better go to the Skelly Station and get these marvelous pictures this very night. Remember, you can't get these pictures any other place in the world. For one is a picture of Chuck Ramsey, autographed for you. It says, Happy Landing, and it's signed Chuck Ramsey right on it. And the other is a picture of Captain Midnight himself. It's also autographed to you. It says, Sincerely, your friend, Captain Midnight. And they're big pictures, too. Now, of course, if you like Captain Midnight and Chuck Ramsey, you'll want to have these pictures. And there's a special reason for getting them at once. Because, you remember, there's a big adventure coming for every boy and girl who listens to this program. And Captain Midnight's picture is a very important clue you'll need to take part in this adventure when it comes. You see, Captain Midnight's picture shows his ring. And on this ring, there's a secret symbol. A secret design that will help you in this thrilling adventure ahead. Help you to help Chuck Ramsey and Patsy Donovan and Captain Midnight, too. Say, you don't want to be left out when this exciting adventure comes, do you? No, sir. You want to be all set to help Chuck and Patsy and Captain Midnight and maybe win a marvelous prize, too. So, if you don't have these pictures already, be sure to get them this very night. And here's the best part of it. These pictures are absolutely free. They don't cost you a cent. You don't need to buy a thing. You don't need box tops or seals or even a penny for a stamp. To get these free pictures, here's all you do. You just go any place where Skelly gasoline is sold. If you're already a member of Captain Midnight's Flight Patrol, show the Skelly Man your card or your badge, and he'll give you the pictures right away. He has them for you at his station. And if you're not a member of Captain Midnight's Flight Patrol, just tell the Skelly Man you want to join, and he'll give you your membership card and both pictures at once. And he'll send in to Skelly headquarters for a big, flashing Mr. Magic weather forecaster badge for you. It's the badge Captain Midnight's Flight Patrol members wear. And like the pictures, it doesn't cost you a cent. So go to any Skelly station tonight, won't you? Go alone, or Dad or Mother will be glad to drive you if you tell them you can get Captain Midnight's picture and Chuck Ramsey's picture absolutely free. Go tonight or tomorrow or Sunday, the next time you're out in the family car. And then you'll have these marvelous pictures, and you'll be all set to help Chuck and Patsy in the thrilling adventure that's coming soon. And now for Captain Midnight. Last time, the second of the two mysterious planes which suddenly swooped down out of the night sky landed on the Black Gulch flying field. Steve, Fred, Chuck, and the new mechanic, Mudd, pounced on the pilot and overpowered him in the dark. Suddenly, he spoke. And the voice was Captain Midnight. Our scene now is just after he is overpowered. Chuck is speaking.
Lincoln,
Deacon,
Ted, we didn't know.
Hey, get off of me. I'm about smothered.
By George, it is, Roberts.
Well, flaming floodlights, where did you come from?
All right, Mud, put that monkey wrench away.
Yeah, don't crown me with that. We've got work to do.
Well, what's it all mean, Red?
I'll tell you in a minute, Chuck. Say, has anyone got a flashlight?
Yeah, I got a small one in my pocket.
Fine, let's have it.
Oh, Jiminy Crickets, look. There are two planes up there.
Hey, what's coming off around here, Red? Wait. I've got to hold up this flashlight and blink it two times.
Gee, is that a signal?
Yes, that's a signal. It's okay to land.
Evidently, they don't see your signal.
Oh, he will pretty soon.
Gosh, that second plane is real low.
There, he sees it now.
You think you'll be able to land all right, Red?
This field's awfully small. He watched me come in first. You'll get down all right, Steve.
Who are these pilots?
Well, I can't tell you right now, Fred. Maybe a little later.
We've had a lot of trouble tonight, Fred. We've got to be careful.
I expected that.
We were held up a little while ago. You know, I think we ought to have a guard at the entrance to the field.
Well, I'll go, Steve. I won't let no one get near here.
That's fine, Mud. Go ahead.
Take my gun, but don't use it unless you have to.
Thank you, Fred. You can bet your last cent no one's going to get on this here field when Mud's around to stop him.
That's the stuff, Mud.
I'll be over at the field, Andrew. Oh, here comes that second plane gliding in.
I'll keep blinking his flashlight so he'll know where to come.
Ah, he's sure doing a swell job. He's following you exactly.
Yeah, the third plane has cut his engine, too.
Yes, he's going to follow the second one in.
Gosh, Rick, where did you get this plane?
That isn't the balcony you took off in.
Well, here comes the second ship.
You sure made a swell landing, all right.
Hey, that's the balcony you took off in, isn't it, Fred?
Yes, it is, Steve.
Gosh, Red, first we thought we were capturing one of Shark's men, and then it turned out to be you.
Now, with all these mysterious planes in the air. Oh, I wish I could figure it all out.
Well, boys, excuse me. I'll have to go over and talk to that pilot. I'll be back in a minute.
All right.
Here comes that third plane.
Hey, he's almost on the ground. There, he made it.
Please, Deacons, what's going on?
Ah, you've got me, Chuck. But I'll bet you one thing. Red knows what he's doing.
And I'm surely glad he's back.
Gosh, isn't this a swell plane, Steve?
Gee, it certainly is, Chuck. Looks to me like one of those late model two-plate pursuit jobs.
That third plane's right by the second one.
And the two pilots are out of their cockpit, and Red's talking to them.
Look, Red went over and cut the engine of the Falcon.
Evidently, he intends for the Falcon to stay here.
Yeah. Hey, great guns, Fred.
Yeah?
I begin to see the light now.
Gosh, look. The pilots who threw the Falcon in is getting into the other plane.
Yeah, Red has said goodbye to them and is coming back here.
Yeah, the first plane's going to take off, too.
Yeah, you're right, Chuck. There she goes.
Say, what did you mean, Steve, by saying you see the light?
Well, here comes Red, Fred. I think he'll explain it.
All right. Well, boys, I guess you're wondering what's going on.
Well, we were a little bit curious.
Yeah, I'll bet you were. Well, here's the story. Both those pilots are G-men. One of them flew the Falcon back here so I could have this other ship to fly around it. See, I didn't want to leave the Falcon behind, so...
And the ship that just took off is carrying the extra pilot back. Is that it, Red?
That's the story, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, Red, what kind of ship is this?
Well, this is the latest model two-seated Tornado.
Please, and Deacons, I've heard of them, but I never expected to see one.
If it's a Tornado, she sure has plenty of speed to burn. Fast climb, excellent stunting ability. My gosh, Red, everything.
Everything is right. This ship's got twin machine guns for the pilot. They're synchronized with the engine.
Wow.
And another gun on pivot for the observer. And I brought along plenty of extra ammunition.
Well, what do you know about that?
Great gun. Tricky.
Besides that, it's got a late-type aerial camera in the floor of the observer's cockpit.
Gosh, we sure got something now.
Yes. I decided it's time we had something to defend ourselves with.
Something is right.
Well, Fred, you can start flying gold out of the mine anytime you want to now.
Well.
I'll convoy your ship with this bus, and I guarantee that no black ship's going to shoot your pilot down.
Well, that certainly takes a load off my mind.
But gee, Red, how can we keep this plane here on the field with Clark and the rest of Barlow's gang around?
We're not going to keep it here, Chuck. I've had my eyes open in case this kind of a situation came up. And I know a place where we will keep it. Now, here's the plan. Just at daybreak, you and I'll take off in this ship, and Steve will follow us in the Falcon. The place I have in mind isn't very far away. We'll leave this plane there and then come back with Steve and the Falcon.
Oh, that'll be swell.
A lot has happened since you left last evening, Red. We better tell you about it.
All right, Fred, let's go to the office.
Right.
In the meantime, we'll have Mud service these ships and get them ready to fly.
Gee, there's another thing, Red.
Why, what's that, Chuck?
McHale and Slim and Pinky are waiting for you over at the jail.
Oh, yes, I was forgetting. Guess we'd better go over there right away. I have a job for them.
Now, what's that, Red?
We're going to form a vigilante committee.
A vigilante committee?
We're going to round up every honest prospector and miner in this town. Our first job is to find Sheriff Ballard. They'll work on the ground while we work in the air. And after we find him, our next job will be Ivan Sharp.
Well, say, things are surely going to happen now.
All right, come on, then. Let's get to the jail. Then we'll come back here to the pilot's bunkhouse, and if there's any time, we'll catch a couple of winks of sleep. It's been kind of rough on you, Chuck.
Well, gee, I feel fine, Red.
Well, you could do with some sleep. I can see that. Come on, let's get going.
It is now several hours later. Dawn is just beginning to break. Two planes stand before the 7G hangar, engines idling. One is Captain Midnight's new Tornado, and the other is the 7G Falcon with Steve at the controls. Red Roberts, really Captain Midnight, is in the Tornado's front cockpit while Chuck is in the rear. Listen as Chuck says.
I guess we're all set, Red.
Have you got your chute buckled on?
I sure have.
And your safety belt fastened?
Oh, I'm fastening that right now.
Oh, Steve's waving to us that he's ready, so I guess we better get going before someone sees the ship.
We're almost set, Red.
Okay, the engine's warmed up. We'll take off first. Steve's going to follow.
Okay.
Here we go. This is a great plane, Chuck. There isn't anything finer in the world.
Is this one better than the one you walked out at Broken Ridge?
Much better, Chuck. This is right from the factory.
Gosh, I never believed I'd fly in such a wonderful plane as this.
Well, you're in it, and you'll be flying it yourself pretty soon.
Do you think so?
Sure. I'm going to let you take the controls in the back seat in a minute.
Boy, oh boy.
Say, can you see Steve?
Wait, I take a look. Yeah, I see him. But he's falling pretty far behind.
I've got this bus throttled down as much as I can.
Well, what time are we going to start looking for Sheriff Ballard?
Later on today, Chuck. First, I want to hide this plane.
Well, do you think you can?
I've got a place fixed that I don't think anyone will ever find. It's going to be our secret landing field.
Gee, a secret landing field? Well, that'll be swell.
We'll keep the ship there, and then we'll go back and forth to it in one of the 7G planes.
Well, supposing we're followed by one of Shark's pilots sometime.
We'll never land there if there's another plane in the air, Chuck.
Gee, Red, isn't this wonderful? Look, the rim of the sun is just showing over the mountain.
Yep. There isn't a more beautiful sight in the world, Chuck, than sunrise from a plane high in the air.
Yeah. Look at the light on the mountains. They stand out so clear.
Mm-hmm. Notice the long shadows in the valleys?
I'll never forget this sight as long as I live.
Flying is a wonderful thing, Chuck. As soon as you get up in the air, you lose all your worries and you forget all your troubles.
I know. You feel sort of separated from the world, and yet you're a part of it. It's sort of...
Well, we got to tend to business, Chuck. What about Steve? Can you see him?
Gee, I can't see anything of him.
By George, Chuck, we can't lose him.
Oh, wait, I look again. Blinking beacons, Red, I can see a plane, but I don't think it's Steve.
Well, has something happened to Steve? And who is flying this other plane, which Chuck sees? Things look a lot more cheerful now that Captain Midnight has returned, but what will be Ivan Sharp's next move? Thrilling moments are ahead. Don't miss them. Tune in next Monday, same time, same station, to Captain Midnight. Remember, get the free pictures of Captain Midnight and Chuck Ramsey today at any Skelly station. There's something every friend of Captain Midnight should have, because they're autographed to you by Chuck Ramsey and by your friend, Captain Midnight. And besides, Captain Midnight's picture has an important clue in it. A clue you'll need in the big adventure that's coming for every fellow and girl who belongs to Captain Midnight's Flight Patrol. These marvelous pictures, you know, are absolutely free. You don't need to buy a thing. You don't need seals or box tops or even a penny for a stamp. You just go to any place where Skelly gasoline is sold. Go alone, or Dad or Mother will be glad to drive you, I'm sure. And tell the Skelly man you want the big free pictures of Chuck Ramsey and Captain Midnight. If you're a member of Captain Midnight's Flight Patrol, show the Skelly Man your card or your badge, and he'll give you the pictures right away. If you're not already a member of Captain Midnight's Flight Patrol, tell the Skelly Man you want to join, and he'll give you these wonderful pictures and your membership card in the Flight Patrol. And he'll send in to Skelly headquarters for the big, brilliant Mr. Magic weather forecaster badge that Flight Patrol members wear. And it won't cost you a single penny. Not 1 cent. It's free. So get these pictures from your Skelly Man tonight, tomorrow, or Sunday, the next time you're out in the family car. And listen Monday same time, same station, for further adventures of Captain Midnight. Brought to you by the Skelly Oil Company, Skelly Jobbers and Dealers. What has happened to Steve? Has one of Ivan Shark's men tampered with his plane? Will Chuck and Captain Midnight be able to help him? Be sure to listen Monday. Until then, this is your Skelly Man saying goodbye and happy landing!
Well, here's where we have to leave it for this week, but we'll be back again next week at any time you want to listen, because it is a podcast after all, with more old-time radio just for you and everyone else to listen to. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.